The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
And you're very welcome back to The Last Word. Frank Rainey here filling in on the show for Matt Cooper this evening. A lot of text coming into us about our last item in relation to the HAP. One listener says, I'm a landlord that has a HAP tenant and very happy with the arrangement once it was fully up and running. It's not the top up that's the issue, it's the length of time it takes to be approved, both tenant and landlord. We stuck with it because we wanted to do something constructive in the current environment and the long term tenancy suited us. Also, the tenant was recommended. Had she been a total stranger, we would have aborted and gone to open market where we would have earned more. They need to speed everything up. Okay, moving on then to our weekly slot, The Last Word on the Environment. John Gibbons joins us in studio. We might start by just looking at the situation over in the US. Obviously, a presidential election now very much well underway. And I want to ask the question, what would a Kamala Harris-Tim Walz presidency mean for climate action, not just in the United States, but globally?
Good evening. Yeah, I think the first thing to say, of course, and probably goes without saying, is that a Trump presidency would be a catastrophe. Mm-hmm. It was a catastrophe the first time around in 2017, but he hadn't really got his sort of fascist boots on fully at that time. But since then, through Project 2025, I mean, their plan to dismantle the federal government and regulatory oversight has been completely laid out for all
to see. Well, Trump has described climate change as a hoax.
Sure, yeah. And that is very much an article of faith for people who are part of his cult. And that is the case. I suppose on a more positive note, as you say, I think since Harris has taken over the Democrat ticket, you see new energy in that ticket. And I think her choice of Tim Walz, this very, very, I suppose, avuncular figure from Minnesota, mm-hmm. kind of a Midwestern, middle-of-the-road kind of guy, a sort of a straight shooter, a straight talker. American politics loves that. And I think it's a really good counterbalance to Kamala Harris. But more importantly, really, Frank, from the point of view of the climate environment, this guy is good. I mean, he's in a sort of what they call a purple state. It is largely Democratic, mm-hmm. but he's pushing really against an environment where it's difficult to make sort of pro-climate changes, but he has succeeded in doing it. For example, he has brought in a law that requires Minnesota utilities to generate 100% of their electricity from carbon-free sources in the next decade or so. He has prioritized public transport and e-bikes. He brought forward a $1.5 billion transport plan. He created a $2 billion climate spending program. And these are relatively small states, so this is quite a lot of cash. Mm-hmm. And he has done it with great skill. And I think I've often thought probably that if this ticket succeeds, he will certainly be the greenest VP since Al Gore. That's for sure. But the difference, I would suggest, Frank, is that this man, Tim Walz, he has the common touch. Mm-hmm. He knows how to
get stuff done by the looks of it.
And also he knows how to get under the skin of the Republicans. I mean, the Republicans have been name-calling people for years. And Walz, and maybe this got him the ticket, but he basically invented the moniker Weird. Yeah. And it now sticks like a smell both to Trump and to J.D. Vance.
Yeah, they don't like it at all, do they?
Yeah, and they're saying that Walz is the VP that Vance wishes he were.
and look, I mean, clearly, you know, climate change and the environment affects us all. But how relevant is the green vote in a US election?
It's difficult to say. I mean, it's been described that there's the so-called six Americas. You have a similar thing here where there is basically roughly one-sixth of the US population that is what's called alarmed. Mm-hmm. Then you've got one-sixth that's dismissive. And in the middle, really, like in so many things in life, it's the people in the middle that have to be swung. And the key thing, really, in bringing climate voters along, and that's what probably where Walz's real skill comes in, is his ability to convert this into not so much the kind of the global, the end of the world stuff, but he's good on the end of the month stuff. Yeah. He's good at converting what climate action means for you and your pocket. Mm-hmm. So, for example, rather than singing the praise of solar energy, he talks about cheap power. That's the way you sell it to the American sort of the middle of the road, the independent voter. What you're saying to them is energy independence, energy security and resilience. These are things that we can pretty much all agree on.
Okay, let's move on then. You might tell us what exactly a Cruzilla is.
Yes, indeed. Okay, I'll start by saying that the Titanic, we all remember the Titanic. Mm-hmm. The Titanic was 50,000 tons.
Yeah, pretty big boat.
That was a big boat, and as the name suggested. Now, you take the 10 largest cruise ships in the world today. Their average weight, 205,000 thousand tons each, right? So they're more than four times the size of the Titanic.
Wow.
So what's happened essentially is we've had a supersizing of the global cruise liner fleet. And it is, I mean, this is, we're into Crazyville. Now, for example, we're on to, these ships are getting bigger and bigger every year. And they reckon that by 2050 on current trajectory, they'll be building cruise liners eight times larger. In other words, 400,000 tons. These would make aircraft carriers look like fishing boats. I mean, these are incredible. One of them, for example, a thing called the Icon of the Seas. It is 20 decks high. It has 40 restaurants, seven swimming pools, a theater, a park. This thing is 365 meters long. Now, few questions, Frank, that arise from that. First of all, these are gigantic floating carbon emissions. They're belching out carbon fumes, diesel fumes into the atmosphere. They're creating huge amounts of what's called black carbon. In fact, so bad is it that many of these cruise ships are not even allowed to come close to ports because they create so much air pollution. But on top of that, let's take even a small cruise liner, much smaller than the ones I've described. They dump, in a typical day, 800,000 litres of sewage into the ocean, 3.8 million litres of grey water. That's the stuff from showers, the stuff from the kitchens and so on. This is untreated in most cases, being dumped directly into the ocean. So these things are basically going around disgorging untreated or barely treated waste directly into the oceans. Now, obviously, they're not allowed to do that when they get close to coast because it doesn't look good when this sewage washes up onto the shore.
Yep.
So they do it out in the open seas instead. But of course, this is toxic waste, and it's adding to our marine pollution crisis.
And how do they compare? And maybe it's a difficult question to answer with your large, passenger aircrafts.
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. It's reckoned now that the most carbon-intensive type of holiday that you can take right now is a cruise holiday. Because typically, and I'll give you a quote here from the NGO Transport and Environment, they said, hardly any form of tourism is more energy-intensive than cruises, specifically in combination with a flight to the point of departure. Because typically, people fly to the location, then they go on these cruises, and all that pollution happening along the way.
So it's the worst of both worlds.
It is absolutely the worst of both worlds. And the Cruzilla, I think, for example, we've seen cities like Venice, Amsterdam and Barcelona putting in restrictions on these things. They're also trying to apply taxes. And we're seeing it here as well in Dublin, in my neck of the woods out in Dunleary. There's a cruise ship out in the harbour pretty much every day. And it begs the question, what benefit do we actually get from these particular ships relative to the massive environmental toll that they actually take?
Okay, let's move on then. You wouldn't think it looking at an Irish summer, but this year is increasingly likely to be the warmest on record. Isn't that the case?
That is absolutely the case, and as you covered it in your news bulletin. In fact, if you take July the 22nd and the 23rd, so just a little over a week ago, they were the two hottest days ever recorded on the instrumental record on Earth, right? So the scientists reckon that they're probably the two hottest days in the last 125,000 years, in all probability. Wow. So this is really pretty amazing stuff. So we know, for example, that between June 2023 and June 2024, every individual month eclipsed its own temperature record for that month. So we had the hottest June, the hottest July, and so on for an entire 13 months. This would be like, I often think it would be like if you're watching the Olympic 100 metres and somebody starts running it in 6.5 seconds, and then the next guy runs it in 5.5, then the next guy runs it in 5. You begin to get the impression that that basically they've been interfered with. And what we have here effectively is, this is a climate system on steroids. There's no possible way these extreme temperatures, and we've talked about it here on the show, year after year, and I come in here every year, every summer and other times of the year, and we're reporting record-breaking temperatures. These things should be something happening very occasionally, but we're not reporting. So what we're seeing instead is this upward ratchet. And it's not a mystery, Frank. We're adding approximately 50,000 million tons of carbon dioxide and equivalent gases to the atmosphere, which is a closed system, every single year. Those gases will continue to warm the atmosphere for decades and in some cases centuries. So basically, go back to our previous item on cruise liners. I mean, we're basically carrying on like there's no tomorrow, dumping these gases into the atmosphere that will continue to haunt our climate system that our children and our grandchildren are going to have to live in. It's a hell of a legacy.
Okay, John Gibbons will have to leave it there.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.